Hi everybody, my name is Rob Howard. I'm a program manager on the Office Extensibility team, and today we are going to get our hands dirty with the Office 365 APIs. A word of warning, this will be an exhausting session. I know I will be exhausted afterwards. I'm gonna go fast, I'm gonna cover a ton of stuff, I'm gonna go through a bunch of stuff at protocol level detail, so if you're not quite prepared for that, if you want a little calmer session, you may wanna find a different one for the hour. But with that, let's go ahead and get started. For everybody who's ready to stay along for the ride, please submit evaluation afterwards. The agenda for today, we're going to start off with a really brief little bit on why you should integrate with the Office 365 APIs, why you should bring Office 365 into your app, and then we're going to get started on how to do that. And we're going to go into a lot of detail about the first step, which is integrating single sign-on, so letting people sign into your application, whether it's a device app or a web app, with their Office 365 identity. And the next step, which is taking the Office 365 APIs and bringing them into your application to make it smarter, to take the user's schedule or their files in OneDrive and let them pull it directly into your application so that they don't have to connect it to their service yourself. And then the last is, for those first two things, we're going to focus a ton on the protocol level details and exactly how stuff works under the covers and the nitty-gritty REST, the different the tokens you need, the exchanges between Azure Active Directory and Office 365. But there's a ton of tools and SDKs, and I'll show you a bunch of those that you can focus on so that while after this session you'll be a great expert in how all that stuff works, hopefully on your day-to-day you won't have to use it. You'll actually just be able to use these tools to be much more productive and efficient integrating them. So you've probably seen this slide before if you went to Rob and Jeremy's talk, but just to give you a quick overview, for the Office platform, we kind of think of there as being two big aspects, and one is this user experience, this notion that users are inside Office getting things done, and we want you to, as developers, to be able to create custom experiences that extend Office with your own services, with your own capabilities. And there's a bunch of talks on that. Rolando Jimenez has a talk, I believe, right after this one on all the capabilities we have for extending Office in all of its many different forms on many different platforms. The second piece of it is the ability to connect to Office 365 data and to, from whatever application you're building, whether that's a device application or a service application or even a web page, connect to Office 365 data and make your apps richer. And this is what we're going to focus on in this session, that second piece, the Office 365 APIs that let you get to that data from wherever you're building your application. You've probably seen this quote before or something like it. If you hear anybody from the Office Developer Platform team talk, we're very happy about Satya having said this. Obviously, we think it's very strategic for the company as well. If you think about it, for anybody who's an Office 365 user, the identity that they use in Office 365 is the one that they use to get their job done every day. So letting you use that as the basis for the identity in your application, and then letting you take things like their calendar, which is the canonical source of where they are and who they're meeting with and what they're working on, and the files in OneDrive, which is the important projects that they're working on, and their notes in OneNote, and all the other places that we have in Office 365 that help people get work done, and bringing that into your application is what makes this such a strategic API for us. This all starts with single sign-on. That's really the first step, is to take your application, whatever form it is, and let people sign into it with their Office 365 account. So they don't have to go get another username and password, or if they do, so that they can connect that username and password directly to their Office 365 account and get both pieces of functionality in an integrated way. Azure Active Directory is the basis for all of these accounts. Office 365 actually uses Azure Active Directory as its directory and profile system. All of the users, all of the passwords that are native to Azure Active Directory, they're inside of, or they're native to Office 365 users, are inside of Azure Active Directory. And Azure Active Directory is a vibrant identity platform in the cloud. You'll see stats here like 86% of Fortune 500 companies are using these Microsoft services that take advantage of Azure Active Directory. There are more than 5 million organizations that use Azure Active Directory to manage their identities in the cloud. They have more than 1 billion authentications a day, so it's a really active and vibrant ecosystem for doing sign-in as part of an organization. So if you have a productivity app and you want people to be able to get work done with your application, allowing them to sign in with Azure Active Directory is kind of a no-brainer. How does this work in the context of Office 365? Well, we use Azure Active Directory as that single protocol to do the authentication, even for our own apps, but certainly for third-party applications. For third-party applications, the first step is signing a user in. And we typically recommend a really simple flow that's become the web standard for doing sign-in called OpenID Connect. It's a closely related protocol to OAuth. We'll go into the nitty-gritty details about how OpenID Connect works. But this is how you let a user sign in with their Office 365 account or Azure Active Directory account into your application. The next step is once they've signed in, you can ask the user to give you access to their services in Office 365 on your behalf through OAuth. So you can do things like call into their directory to look at their management hierarchy, see who their direct reports are, see what groups they're a member of. You can call into Exchange to get their calendar and see if they're free or busy at this time, or see what meetings they're in, or what location they're coming from and going to, and build more intelligent apps as a result. We've had some integration with Azure Active Directory, with Exchange, with SharePoint, with OneDrive for Business for a little while. We have new integration, very recent, and I'll talk about all the places we're integrated with Yammer and OneNote APIs as well. So you can now use Azure Active Directory to sign into those APIs too. And you can use it from any sort of application, whether you're building a device application, whether you're building a web application. We now support cores and the OAuth implicit flow to allow you to build single-page apps. So directly from HTML, you can call these Office 365 APIs and sign users in. And we also support service apps. All the Office 365 APIs in Azure Active Directory now support app authentication, app-only authentication, the client credentials flow. So you can have a service application, like a daemon process, that runs and does, say, management operations on everybody's email mailbox overnight, or does operations like provisioning that require higher user privileges and wouldn't be doable by an end user typically. And all of this stuff is available whether you're connecting directly with a company through its administrator. If you have an application you're building that you sell to an IT department and they acquire it, they can give your app access to all of the organization's content on behalf of all of its users all at once through admin consent. Or if you actually engage with end users directly and you want an end user in an organization to adopt your app, they can individually consent to access to their own services. They can let you sign them in without their tenant admin's approval. Of course, tenant admins can decide they want to turn that feature off, but the vast majority of tenants do not have that feature off. So end users can turn that on as well. And it's all based on secure standard protocols. OpenID Connect for authentication for that single sign-on piece, and OAuth 2 for access to those resources. And this protocol has a ton of advantages I'm sure you're pretty familiar with, but just to give a really quick recap, it doesn't require that the application capture user credentials. It's great that you don't have to type in your username and password to the application, and your application doesn't have to try and store that securely. It gives you fine-grained access, so the app has to ask for exactly what it wants to access, and it only gets access to just your calendar, not everything you have access to. So if you're a tenant administrator, it can't suddenly start deleting your directory or something like that just because you happen to start using this application. And it supports a bunch of auth flows for end users that are really important for organizations in the enterprise. So multi-factor authentication and federated sign-ins with on-premises identity providers, all that stuff is kind of handled transparently as part of these protocols, as you'll see in just a minute. And then it gives you long-term access to these APIs. If a user hasn't sort of revoked your app's access, you can use a refresh token to access their services on their behalf, even when they're not interactively using your app, and do smart things for them while they're asleep, send them summary emails, send them intelligent things based on changes in their data. So you've got a ton of features here for how Azure Active Directory adds a ton of value when you're interacting with Office 365 APIs. So what I'm actually going to do is go through the details of the protocol flow. We're going to go through how OpenID Connect and OAuth work in the context of Azure Active Directory and Office 365 in a quick diagram, and then I'm actually going to go through it by hand. This is a quick flow diagram. On the left-hand side, you'll see your application. On the right-hand side, there's an Office 365 API you want to call. Say you want to get a user's Exchange calendar. In the middle, there's a couple of endpoints in Azure Active Directory, the authorization endpoint and the token endpoint. We use a pretty typical OAuth or OpenID Connect flow in order to do this. So the first thing the application does is it requests an authorization code from that authorization endpoint inside of Azure Active Directory. And the authorization endpoint you can kind of think of as a web page. It's a web page that the app is going to send the user to, either in a browser window or through a browser redirect, or it's going to use a web browser control in a native app, and it's going to send the user to that authorization endpoint web page. And that's where you see that prototypical OAuth screen that says, hey, do you want to give the app access to this stuff? Do you want to let it access your mail? Do you want to let it read your files? And the user gets an opportunity to say yes or no. If the user says yes, then the authorization endpoint returns what's called an authorization code to your application. And that authorization code signifies that the app has given your app access to, the user has given your app access to that stuff. The application turns around and makes a web service call to the token endpoint, and it sends that authorization code to prove, yep, the user gave me access to this stuff. And the token endpoint's web service returns a bunch of tokens. It returns an ID token, an access token, and a refresh token. And if you're doing just single sign-on and OpenID Connect, the ID token is where you can stop. That ID token has the user's identity. It'll give you profile information if you've got enough permission to get their name. You can tell them, hello, Rob, you've now signed in with your account. We've got your user profile, and we now understand who you are. If you want to continue and access services on their behalf, then you take that access token, and you use that access token to call the Office 365 API just like you would any other web service API. So a pretty simple, straightforward OAuth flow, OpenID Connect flow. Let's actually go and see it in action. So I'm going to go through, and we're going to do the whole thing from scratch without any libraries, without any code. We're just going to do it in the browser and with a bunch of kind of tools so you can see the request back and forth. This is the exhausting part. You ready? OK, so I'm actually going to start in Office 365. This is the admin portal if you haven't seen it. The reason I start here is because I am an administrator of an Office 365 tenant. It's very creatively called Rob's Developer Tenant. Remember that name? It's hard to remember. And Rob's Developer Tenant is an Office 365 tenant. But when I created it, under the covers, we created an Azure Active Directory tenant to store all of its users and groups and applications. So you'll see if I go, for example, to this admin portal and I look at the active users, you can see a list of users. You can see groups here. And this allows me to create and manage the groups inside of my portal. And you'll also see a listing here down to a link to Azure Active Directory's management portal. If I switch over to that management portal, you can see a directory named the same thing as that Office 365 organization, Rob's developer tenant. And you can see if I go to the user tab, for example, that you'll see the exact same list of users that were in the Office tab. So if I create a user here, you'll see it in Office. If I create a user in Office, you'll see it here. Same for groups. So this is really the underlying directory for Office, even though as an Office admin, you may not actually interact with it very often. If I want to manage applications, there's not an experience for that in the Office admin portal. So you'll go to the Azure Active Directory portal and go to the Applications tab. When you first come in here with an Office 365 tenant, you'll probably just see a couple of apps in here. If I filter for Office 365, you can see Office 365 Exchange Online and Office 365 SharePoint Online. Those will probably be the only two. You may have a couple more depending on what you've done in the tenant. You can see that they're actually published by Microsoft Corporation. These are the core apps that model SharePoint and Exchange for auth purposes. They're modeled the same way your applications will be. So you can see as an admin, I get to manage not only the apps that I'm creating in my organization, but any apps that have access to data inside of my organization or that are being used inside of my organization. So if I want to create a new one, I just go to Add. I could choose to add something from a gallery that somebody else has produced, but I'm going to actually add one that my organization is creating. I'm going to call it Build Demo 2015. I can choose whether I want to do a web application or a native client application. I'll choose web application because it requires a couple more fields, so I get to explain a little more. There's the sign-on URL, which is a pretty simple, straightforward thing. I'm creating a web application. This is where's the URL where you're going to sign in. So I'm just going to do http://. Made up website. I used to actually say that made up website wasn't a registered domain, but then I actually gave a talk where I said that, and somebody in the audience during my talk went and registered the domain. So it's actually registered now, but there's still no real website there. So you'll see errors when you go to it, but that's OK. And then the second one is app ID URI, which this one's a little unfortunate because Azure Active Directory supports a ton of different protocols like WSFed and SAMLP and a whole bunch of things that are much more complicated than OAuth and OpenID Connect. And OAuth doesn't actually use this. But for right now, we still ask you for it. So apologies about that. We'll get that fixed very soon. But the strategy to use here is you need a unique UI, and you need one that's a registered domain. So like when I created this Office 365 tenant, I called it Junction. The usernames are like junction.onmicrosoft.com. I'm just going to use that as the domain so that I get a registered domain. And then I'm just going to put something unique afterwards, and it doesn't really matter. I'm not actually going to use this for OAuth. So I'm going to hit OK. It's going to verify that this is actually unique first. Surely that's unique. Hopefully I didn't lose internet. Pending. Come on. Dare I try and change it? OK. All right, so complete. So I've created this application. It's going to go and provision a new application inside of my directory. Come on, network. I'm even on the Wired Network. What you'll see when this comes up is that I'll have a configuration tab, so I can look at all the properties of my application. I can see things like the display name for the application, the sign-on URL. I can see a logo for it that I can replace. I can configure all that stuff from inside of Azure Active Directory. I'm going to open another tab just in case. Ah, here we go. Okay, so I'm going to go to the Configure tab. You can see build demo 2015 as the name. You can see that sign-on URL. You can see the logo that we can replace. I can configure whether or not the application is multi-tenant. I'm going to leave that as no for right now, but I'm actually going to have to come back to it in just a minute, and I'll explain it in more detail. You can see client ID. This is sort of like the username for the application, so this uniquely identifies my application along the protocol. Then you can see keys. This is kind of like a password for my application. I'm going to ask to create a new one. It won't show it to me until I hit save, which is a little bit annoying, but I can deal with it. The next thing I'll see is the app ID URI we already talked about, and then the reply URL. And the reply URL is, if you think back to that diagram, we went to the authorization endpoint, the user said, yes, I want to give you stuff, and we sent back an auth code, an authorization code. The reply URL is where we're going to send that authorization code. So I'm going to keep this as madeupwebsite.com. I could put a path behind there if I want a specific page on madeupwebsite.com, but the website is made up, so it doesn't really exist. It doesn't have a path, so we'll just leave it as that. And then the most interesting thing down here is permissions to other applications. And this is where I say that my app wants to do single sign-on, that it wants access to OneDrive for Business, that it wants access to Exchange Online. And I do that by default. My permissions are to Windows Azure Active Directory just to do single sign-on and read the user's profile. So basically just to do that OpenID Connect part. But I can also add applications, and you'll see a bunch of applications from Microsoft here. You can see Exchange Online, you can see SharePoint Online, you can see OneNote Now, you can see Power BI. There are a bunch more that you'll see depending on if they're being used in your tenant. You can even create custom applications and expose your permissions that way, so there's not just Microsoft applications. For now, I'll just stick with SharePoint Online and Exchange Online. For each one of those, you can configure the delegated permissions. These are permissions that you want to ask users for. So I want to say, for example, hey, I want to be able to read and write contacts, or read and write calendars, or send mail as a user, or read and write mail as a user. For SharePoint, there's a bunch of permissions in there around running searches, reading and writing their files in OneDrive for Business. We have a bunch of new scopes that actually just shipped this week for a bunch of SharePoint workloads like manage metadata and user profiles and search. So you can add those as well. So those are the delegated permissions. I'll also explain real quick the application permissions. Application permissions are for those service application scenarios I was talking about, where I have, say, a daemon app that runs on a regular basis and does maintenance tasks, or goes and does provisioning, or does smart things in the middle of the night for all the users in an organization. And these aren't on behalf of a particular user. They're not delegated by a user. They are application permissions that are called directly by the application. So I can also give applications permission that way, and Exchange and SharePoint and Azure Active Directory all now support that. All right, so I've configured my permissions. I'm going to go ahead and hit save. It's going to take a second to go and create that. While it's creating that, I'll show you this dialog here. If you click View Endpoints in the bottom, you get this handy dialog, and it shows you a bunch of different protocol endpoints. You can see stuff like WSFed and SAMLP and a bunch of really complicated protocols. At the bottom, you'll see two things that hopefully sound familiar, OAuth 2 authorization endpoint and OAuth 2 token endpoint. So you saw those as two lines in the first diagram. I can take those and I can use those as the basis for my protocol flow. One thing you'll see here is that in the URLs, they actually have a GUID as the second segment for the URL. That's the tenant URL, this 89DDAD4 thing. That's the tenant URL. I actually have a little scratch pad here where I have the authorization endpoint and the token endpoint. Instead of that GUID, I'm using common. And common works for all multi-tenant applications. So if I create an app in my Rob's developer tenant and I want somebody in a different tenant to use it, I can use the common endpoints across all of them. All right, so this is essentially that same thing. I've got the authorization endpoint. It's common slash OAuth 2 slash authorize is the authorization endpoint. It's got a redirect URI, which is, again, the place where we want to send the authorization code. A response type, which tells it what I want back. In this case, I want a code back. There are also some flows where you can ask for a token directly if you're doing a web page app. And then I have to tell it which client ID I am. So I'm going to take that from the site that just saved, copy the client ID, and come back here and paste it in. And then I'm just going to copy and paste that into a browser window, because remember I said, hey, this is just a web page. The authorization endpoint is just a web page. I'm going to do it in an incognito window, so I'm actually not signed in. Oh, I actually am signed in. Oh, bummer. Let me close the incognito windows and try that again. Paste. Ooh, not signed in. Okay, so I'm not signed in. It's going to force me to sign in first. And I'm actually going to sign in with a user from a different tenant. And in fact, I'm going to sign in with my actual Microsoft.com account. So this is my real Microsoft account that I use for work every day. I'm going to sign in with it for two reasons. One, because it's in a different tenant from the one where I registered the app, and I want you to see what that looks like. And two, because MSIT does this thing that I consider really sadistic and annoying, which is they require a bunch of extra auth when I go and sign in. So if I move that off, you'll see, oh, it recognizes, oh, this tenant requires a whole bunch of extra sign-in, so they're going to redirect to ADFS, and I have to sign in. This is an on-premise ADFS that MSIT hosts, and I have to sign in with a smart card, or if I do a username and password like this, it's going to tell me, oh, you actually have to have some extra security information, and hopefully it's going to call my phone, and then when it calls my phone, I have to type in a PIN in order to finish the authentication. Hopefully I get reception here. There we go. Hey, it's ringing. Hold on a second, guys. I usually don't answer phone calls during my session, but I'll make an exception. Okay, so I type in my PIN there. The authentication continues. And then you'll see an error, but the error is expected. So I am actually signed in. And the app actually had no idea that all that other stuff happened. All the ADFS redirect, all the, hey, phone stuff, all that stuff was my IT department configured it. As an app developer, I didn't have to do anything to handle it. So that's one of the great things about OAuth and OpenID Connect is all that interstitial interjection of auth stuff is totally free. I did get an error, though, and I did that on purpose. I'll show you a couple of things with this error. One is that if you try this at home, all the copying and pasting and taking parameters from here to there, you are almost certainly to mess up at least once. I will mess up at least once during this demo, I am sure. And you'll get an error. And the first error that you see up here is an end user facing error, and it's not very helpful. It says, sorry, we're having trouble signing you in. We received a bad request. So it doesn't like the authorization endpoint request I made. Look down here instead. This is the developer facing error in this little light gray text. It says application with identifier, and that GUID is the client ID for the new app I created, was not found in the directory, and this GUID is the GUID for the Microsoft IT tenant. So it's telling me, oh, I can't find the app that you're trying to sign in with in your tenant. Anybody know why that is? Multi-tenant, yeah. So when I went back here, if I can find that page again, when I went here, remember I said application is not multi-tenant. I created the app in my Rob's developer tenant. I tried to use it in Microsoft's tenant, and I said it's not multi-tenant. So I'm going to hit yes, and I'm going to hit save to make it multi-tenant. This is a good time to tell you that Azure Active Directory has an eventually consistent model for the directory. So when you make a change, it can sometimes take like 15, 20 seconds. So if you're doing a demo, you have to kind of tap dance for a little bit while the whole thing propagates, and then we get to make the changes. And at some point, you can say, okay, well, it probably has finished changing. But if you're doing this and you actually run into a problem and you try it and you make a change and it doesn't take an effect, just wait 15 seconds and try again and check and see. I'm going to do this again. This time, ADFS already has me signed in, so this should be pretty quick. And hopefully all the changes to make it multi-tenant have propagated. Great. So now I'm at the actual authorization endpoint. This is that consent experience we were talking about. I can see the title of my application, Build Demo 2015. I can see the URL where the application's registered, madeupwebsite.com. I can see the exact set of permissions that the application is asking for. Those are all the boxes that I checked. The end user can mouse over these boxes to get a little bit more details on what that means. I can see who I'm signed in as. If I want even more details, I can see which organization I'm a part of and which organization published this application that's asking for all this stuff. I can say, well, Rob's developer tenant, that guy sounds really shady. I don't really want to give him access and hit cancel. Or I can do what I'm going to do in this case is say that Rob is a stand-up guy and I'm going to hit accept. First, I'm actually going to go over to a tool. How many people have used Fiddler? Awesome, almost everybody. Great. So Fiddler, for the few people who haven't used it, is a web debugging tool. It's spectacular for looking at requests across the wire. I'm going to start it capturing before I make this accept request, and I'm going to hit accept. And remember what's going to happen. It's going to create an auth code, and it's going to send it to madeupwebsite.com so it looks like, hey, this is a blank website that hasn't actually registered anything. I'm going to go to Fiddler real quick and stop it capturing. The one thing I'll point out, though, is that if you actually look in the query string, I'm at madeupwebsite.com, but you'll see this parameter, code equals. And that's that authorization code. This is the thing that says, yep, the user just said you can access my Office 365 APIs. So that authorization code is what I'm going to use to then call the token endpoint, right? So I'm going to actually do that request. I'm going to go back into Fiddler. Again, I can see the request. Here's that madeupwebsite.com request. Here's the code. I can look at the, so for those of you who aren't familiar, these are all the requests that happened while I was in there. On the right-hand side, I can see inspectors, all kinds of different views on the request. And I can see, for example, the web forms parameters that were sent. Here's the query string parameter code and its value. So I can see that code. It also sends a session state, which you can actually round trip. If you send somebody to the authorization endpoint, you can set a state and they'll send it back to you so that you can keep track and correlate those requests if you need to. But I've got this request. I'm going to go ahead and remove all of the other sessions in there. And now I'm going to make a request to the token endpoint to go and get that access token. So I've got the token endpoint here. Again, the token endpoint is pretty similarly named. Instead of common OAuth2/authorize, it's common OAuth2/token. I'm going to copy that guy. I'm going to use another feature of Fiddler called the Composer, which lets me create new web traffic. And I'm actually going to paste in this URL for the token endpoint. I'm going to get rid of all the headers there. And I'm going to make a post request instead of a get request, because I've actually got to post a bunch of information about the stuff I have to redeem this token. And I'm going to take this placeholder text and show you all the information that I have to send. So if I start on the left, the first thing I have to say is, what type of proof am I showing you that a user gave me a grant, that a user granted me consent? So grant type is the first thing. In this case, I'm going to give it that authorization code. So I say authorization code. I have to tell it the redirect URI again, just to make sure that the redirect the code was sent to the right URI and that everything matches up from a security perspective. I have to give it the client ID to tell it which client. So I'm going to go back here and copy that guy and paste that in. And then I have to go give it the client secret. One unfortunate thing about the client secret is it's not always URL safe. It's not always URL encoded. So you've got to do a quick encoding. Actually, one thing I learned preparing for this is that if you just search for URL encoder on Bing, it actually gives you an inline URL encoder. Isn't that cool? So I'll encode this thing, grab it, and go back to Fiddler and paste that in as the client secret. And then I need that code. So I'll go back to the inspector and copy the code and paste that guy in. And then the last thing I need is the resource. And the resource is a little bit special to Azure Active Directory and Office 365. This, you won't find this in like a single service OAuth flow. Like if you're only talking to Facebook, you don't have to use a resource. But in this case, we have a bunch of different services that we're talking to. But we want the end user to only see one consent screen. So there's one auth code, one refresh token, but we actually have to get different access tokens for the different services we want to talk to. So I have to tell it which service I want to go talk to. And I do that by basically putting a URI in here. So in this case, I'm going to start with a service called the Discovery Service, which I'll talk about in just a minute. And it's on api.office.com/discovery. So I'll use that as my resource. If I did everything right, I'm going to hit execute. I get a 200 response back here. And if I look at the raw response, I get back a bunch of JSON. If I look at the JSON version of the response, I can see it in a little bit cleaner fashion. And the first thing I'll talk about is the ID token. The ID token is, if you're just doing SSO, if you're just doing OpenID Connect, this is all you need. You just grab the ID token. You can check the expiration, things like that. But you grab the ID token, and you use that to sign the user in. And this token is what's called a JOT token, which is how you say JWT, JSON Web Token. It's one of the only specs that I know that like the first sentence of the spec says, you pronounce this JOT. I guess they just really didn't want to have like the GIF versus JIF controversy, so it's JOT, not JWT. So I take this JWT token, and a JSON Web Token is a Base64 encoded JSON string. So if I take this thing and I go and unencode it, and there happens to be this handy little JWT viewer on calebb.net, if I paste that guy in and remove this ID token equals thing from the front, they will unencode this thing, and you'll see inside of it just some JSON. So very simple JSON like you'd get back from any other web service that tells me all about who that user is. Just to point out a couple of parameters, and calebb.net actually will show you all the meaning behind these parameters too if you mouse over them, so a cool little resource. The audience is the application this token's intended for, so this is actually the same client ID I got back from the Azure Management Portal. This is the tenant ID that the user's from, so this is the Microsoft tenant ID. This is the object ID that identifies the user. Here's my user principal name, R. Howard. Here's my given name, Rob, and my family name, which is Howard Office. There are actually like a bunch of Rob Howards at Microsoft. It's really annoying, so I have to specify Office. And then you can actually see one other thing that's really cool, which is that if I actually have an application that cares how strong the sign-in was, this AMR thing is the authentication methods reference. It's a JSON array of all the methods that were used to authenticate the user. So I can see PWD for password and MFA for multi-factor auth. So I can see that the user signed in with both of those if I want to do some extra authorization and say this is a super privileged operation, you have to be signed in with MFA or something like that. All right, so and I'm done if I'm doing OpenID Connect, right? I just take the username, I take the display name, and I've got my application ready to go. So that's where OpenID Connect stops. OAuth just continues on from there. We're going to go through that real quick. So OAuth uses all the other parameters in here, the access token and the refresh token in particular. And the access token is, again, the token that I take as my app and I send over to that Office 365 API to make a web service call. So the first call I'm going to make is to the discovery service. And I'm going to copy this access token, go back to the composer, and I'm going to make a GET request. Let me clear out all this other stuff. And I'm going to make that GET request to the discovery service, which is at https://api.office.com/discovery. And I want to get v10/me and all of my services. And what this endpoint is going to do is it's going to give me back all of the services that this user has that this token gives you access to. It's going to give me back all the endpoints, all the descriptions of them. So things that you might have had to do in the past where you do things like ask the user where their SharePoint site is or where their OneDrive for Business site is, you don't have to do that anymore because this discovery service is a static URL and it will give you a pointer to all those. But I have to give it the access token that I just got. And the way I do that is in a header called authorization. And I type in the string bearer, as in this is a bearer token, and I give a space, and then I just paste in the access token. If you're trying this at home, there's this really annoying thing, which is every time you copy out of the JSON viewer, it will give you the name too. So I have to delete access_token=. And then I just hit execute. And I get a request back from api.office.com, and what you'll see in here is a bunch of different entries for all the different services that this access token gave me access to. So you'll see capability my files, you'll see the service endpoint URL is on microsoft-my.sharepoint.com/api/v10/me. So my application can discover these at runtime and doesn't have to know, oh, Microsoft's tenant's here or Contoso's tenant's here. It can get all this stuff at runtime. So you can see the service endpoint URI, you can see the resource ID. That one's for my files, here's one for contacts, here's one for mail, here's one for calendar. And if I asked for other services like your directory hierarchy, then I would get one for Azure Active Directory, things like that. So discovery service is probably your first stop when you're building a new application and signing a user in for the first time to find out where all their services. But I actually want to interact with their services in order to go get their data, in order to go interact with their calendar, for example. So I will instead go back and get a new token. Remember, I have to have an access token that's specific to each service. This time, I don't have to ask the user for anything. I can use the refresh token to go get a new access token without asking the user for anything. And I'm going to start from this token request, and I'm going to do another feature called replay reissue from composer, which just takes that request and dumps it in the composer. And I'm going to make just a little change here, which is that instead of grant type equals authorization code, I want refresh token. And instead of the actual code, I want to give the refresh token. And so I can get that from this response, refresh token equals, and just paste that right where the code was. And the last thing I want to do is change the resource to point towards the resource. The resource ID for my calendar was outlook.office365.com. So I'll type that in. I'll hit execute. Again, now I'm getting a new access token. You can see the access token in here without asking the user for a new one. And I can do that for as long as the refresh token is good, which is a rolling window of 6 months. So if the user is continually using your application, you can continue to act on their behalf until they say, oh, I don't like your app anymore, and revoke its permission. So I'm going to take this access token now and start making some calls into Office 365 APIs. And this is the sort of portion when I'm switching from, hey, we did all the auth and OpenID Connect stuff, to now I'm going to do a bunch of API stuff. But I'm, again, going to do it at the REST layer. I'm just going to show you the calls directly. So I'm going to start off with some basic ones. I'm going to do a GET request, and I'm going to make it to outlook.office365.com, which is, again, where the calendar service is. /API/v1.0. And I'm going to make the most basic request I can think of, which is just give me the information about the current user, so /me. And I'll do, not authentication, authorization, bearer, and paste that in again. Get rid of the access token again. And hit execute. And then Exchange is going to return to me some really basic information about the user, just who the current user is, what their mailbox GUID is. So I have success. I have now called my first Office 365 API in Exchange. Obviously, that's kind of a lame one. I'll do some more interesting ones. So I'm going to call /events, /events. And this is going to give me all of the events on the user's default calendar. So if I go inside of inspectors, you'll see I have actually some really simple clean JSON to get all of the events on the calendar. So you can see an event on my calendar here. You can see its location. Here's the display name in that conference room. You can see the list of attendees and their email addresses. You can see the start time and the end time, the start time and the subject and the end. So really simple, straightforward JSON that describes my calendar. I made an unbounded request, so I just asked for all of the events on my calendar. So one thing you'll see that's also common to all the Office 365 APIs is that if we decide, hey, we can't give you all the data in one page, you'll see this odata.nextlink parameter at the top, which says there's another page of this data, and you can continue grabbing more pages if you'd like the rest of the data from the service. And all of the Office 365 APIs behave in that same way, so you can count on that same behavior for paging. If I want to go in here and I want to limit the amount of objects that I get back, I can just say, oh, I only want the top two, $top equals two in the query string. Again, all the Office 365 APIs have that same behavior. If I hit execute, you'll see, oh, I only get back two objects in the response instead of the many, many objects that I got back. There are other parameters like, say, I don't really care about all of the metadata. There was a lot of stuff in there. And maybe I only care about a few things. So I can do $select. And I can say, just give me back the ID, the subject, the start, and the location. And this will actually then limit the response to only return all of those fields. So you see ID, location, start, and subject for the two objects that were there. So now I've limited the bytes over the wire. I've made it really efficient to call the API. I've limited the parsing I have to do to pull it back in. And you see those two stacked. So I have my $top and my $select. Both as parameters that affected the request. So I'm only getting two back, and I have the select there. I can do some more things like that. So for example, say I wanted to get back only specific objects by filtering them. So I can do $filter. And there's a little mini filter language that does all kinds of stuff, like equals, greater than, less than, contains, starts with. And I'm going to just do a simple one where I'm going to say filter where the subject, and I have to encode this, EQ for equals, and I'll just say soccer game. I'm a lover of soccer, so I have a few of these on my calendar. And I'll hit execute there as well. This one has to parse through a little bit more stuff, so it takes a little bit more time. But then you see I get back just appointments that include, that have a subject of soccer game. And then the last one that I'll show you as part of this thing is that I can also order those. So if you look at this request, I have a soccer game from like last week, or actually from Monday, and then I have a soccer game from 2009. I'd actually like them in chronological order, so I'll go back to the composer. Oh, I clicked an inspector that's going to crash. No. Cross your fingers. Everybody hold your breath. So what I'm going to do when this comes back is I'm going to go back to the composer and I'm going to add $orderBy to the query string parameter. And I'm just going to say $orderBy equals start. And then it will order all the responses by that start field. And I can do a comma delimited list if I want to order by multiple. And I can specify whether I want them to be ascending or descending. And again, hey, it came back. OK. So I'll go back here and do $orderBy equals start. And hit execute, and then you'll see I get back actually a game from 2007 and a game from 2009 in the order that they were on in my calendar. So all of those things, all those query string parameters, that's one of the nice consistent things about all these Office 365 APIs. If they support that functionality, they support it through those same mechanisms. Dollar select, dollar filter, dollar order by, dollar top. Use OAuth the same way. You access OAuth access tokens the same way. And that functionality works across a variety of services. Just a couple of other real quick things I'll show you. So these services aren't just for reading data. They're also for writing data. So I'm actually going to go and show you my calendar real quick. So I'm going to log into Office 365. I'm going to switch over. Switch over to my calendar. And you can see today, so we're on Wednesday, April 19th. For those of you who are aren't familiar with how REST APIs typically work, I've been doing a bunch of GET requests on the events collection. So GET on /me/events. And a GET request on events usually means, hey, get me all the things that are in the events collection. There's another HTTP verb called POST. And if you post to a collection, it usually means add another item to this collection. So if I want to add a new event, then I would typically do it by doing a POST to events. I have to tell it what type of content I'm going to post. So I'll say I'm going to give it just some simple JSON. And then adding to it's really simple. So I just create a JSON body. I'll do subject, test, and I'll do start. And I have to type this in UTC. So let's hope my date math is OK. You guys can check me. Let's see, we're in -8. So we're in 16. Oh, yeah, good call. Start, thanks. Man, you guys are good. You're really paying attention. Thank you. So this will be somewhere close to this time. I think it's a little earlier. I'll do a start, and I'll do an end just an hour later, 04:29:23:55, since I don't think it will let me do 24. OK, and then I'll just hit execute. And if I formatted everything right, I should get back 201, which is the HTTP response for created. And then I should see on this calendar, in just a moment, a new appointment called test show up, if I did all the date math right. 4:29, I think I did. We'll refresh it. So there's my test appointment. So obviously, I can do reads, I can do writes, I can interact with a whole bunch of very robust functionality. I'll go back real quick to the slides. I know that was a lot of demo. Hopefully, that gave you a good, solid idea of what's going on behind the scenes, what's going on in the protocols. Just a quick review of the stuff you saw. The first part of discovering services is using that discovery service. Again, that's api.office.com/discovery. It tells you where all the services you have access are. It uses that same Azure Active Directory authentication. You saw the Office 365 APIs. They're simple REST OData service APIs. They have a bunch of consistent behavior. They authenticate the same way. You use those same sort of query string parameters. They have the same sort of JSON encoding across them. You can find all of their URLs through discovery. And you can, because they're just using standard OAuth and OpenID Connect and REST, you can use them from any sort of application, whether it's web, a device on any platform, or any sort of service application that you're building. There are a bunch of different pieces of functionality in the O365 APIs. This isn't even really super complete, but this will give you a good summary. And almost all of these on the slide actually have a dedicated session this week to talk about them. So if you want to see the nitty-gritty details of any one of these particular ones, we've got Azure AD graph stuff. I think that one, unfortunately, was like last hour. Stuart Kwan did some stuff on Azure AD. Exchange Online, Rohit Nagarmal is going to do a session on Outlook.com APIs, mail calendar contact there. There's a bunch of sessions on SharePoint lists and libraries and search and user profile. Ryan Gregg in the back of the room is doing something on Friday about OneDrive and OneDrive for Business. They even have a converged API that works the same for consumers and organizations to get to users' files and folders. Gareth Jones is doing one on OneNote, so you can use these same O365 APIs to look at people's notes and to post into their notebooks. Yammer has now support for Azure Active Directory authentication. The Video Portal APIs, which is a new kind of enterprise YouTube thing for managing videos, has a nice set of video APIs. And this new unified groups infrastructure, which you may have started to hear about, which is a new collaboration infrastructure for collaborating across boundaries with a single group of people in Office 365, also has a set of APIs that are available through this unified endpoint that you may have heard about. And I'll talk about more in just a second. If you want to know the nitty-gritty details, I definitely check out our Office 365 REST API reference. And I know in the past, a bunch of our REST API reference has been pretty crummy. If you actually go and check this out, it's pretty good. There's actually even some things where you can, there's always room for us to improve, I'm sure. But if you go and check it out, you can actually look at the API reference. You can go and dive into specific APIs. So say I want to look at the Outlook Mail REST API. I can do things like look at all the different operations it supports. I can click on one like get a message, and I can see the URLs. I can see sample requests. I can even change parameters and say, hey, I want to look at the inbox. And I can hit try, and it will, in the browser, make a request to a sample tenant without me even signing in and show you what the request and response looks like. So there's some pretty solid documentation, and it covers pretty much all of the Office 365 APIs that I had there. So I'll go back and show you that URL again. This is definitely the URL that I'd send you to if you want to look at the details of all the different Office 365 APIs that we support. Okay, so I showed you, I did the demo for the Office 365 APIs. One thing I want to talk about really quick, there were a few awkward things in that demo. Like, I had to go to the Azure Active Directory portal, register an application. There were a bunch of non-Office 360 or non-OAuth related things in there. All of these Office 365 APIs are on different URLs. You saw like outlook.office365.com, and you saw microsoft-my.sharepoint.com and api.discovery.com. I had to do like an extra discovery step in order to get it, and I had to go get multiple different access tokens to interact with different services. It actually gets even a little bit more complicated if you say want to go get the user that modified a file and then go to a different API to go find what department they're in or who their manager is. So those are kind of complicated scenarios when you cross the boundaries of these APIs. We're actually announcing this week we've created this unified API. You might have seen it in Rob and Satya's demo during the keynote. It's all on graph.microsoft.com and allows you to get to all these Office 365 APIs through a unified endpoint, exactly to address all those points. So you don't have to deal with any of that stuff anymore on this API. It's still in preview, but we'll certainly continue to invest in this. And the message I want to send is that it's really the same, but simpler. All of that app registration stuff, the permission scopes and security, the OpenID Connect and OAuth 2 flows, they're all the same. The simpler piece is that you get that one endpoint, you only have to have one access token, you don't have to do discovery, but the APIs themselves are the same. And Yina Arenas is going to do a session tomorrow, I think it's the second slot, like maybe 10:30 or something, on the unified endpoint, and she'll go into a ton of detail. So if you want to learn about the unified endpoint and the specifics there, go and check it out. It's really a very cool infrastructure that we're really, really excited about being the future of these APIs. I've talked about this one quite a bit, but this is just in there so you can see, hey, we have a bunch of things that have already been generally available. We're launching a bunch of preview things right now on the unified endpoint, the video portal APIs, OneNote APIs, Yammer APIs, and we're continuing to iterate on a bunch of things that will land soon. Things like having the same APIs for consumer properties and commercial properties, which Ryan will talk about for OneDrive, and Rohit will talk about for Outlook.com. We've got the Office Graph API that gives you those insights about documents that are interesting to you or people that work with other people across boundaries. We've got a Tasks API coming. We've got Link and Skype APIs that are coming. So we're going to continue to iterate on these things and build more and more very quickly. I'm doing on time. Okay. So the next thing is tools and SDKs. So I know that that was a ton of work to go through all of that, but hopefully you guys really deeply understand everything that happens in these OAuth requests and these REST requests underneath the covers. The good news is that the vast majority of the time, you don't actually need to know that stuff. It's good to understand it so you know what's going on. It's good to understand it so when something goes wrong, you really aren't just using a library. But we've got tools and SDKs for pretty much every platform that you can use in order to be more efficient and more productive than having to go through Fiddler and getting an access token for every one of your customers. I'll start with auth, because auth is really the hardest piece and the piece where you want a library the most. And the Azure Active Directory guys have done, I think, an awesome job of building a ton of libraries. And they're all open source libraries. If you go to Azure Active Directories at the Azure Active Directory org's GitHub page, you can see a ton of their client libraries that handles that entire OAuth flow for you. You don't have to mess with auth codes or access tokens or OpenID Connect tokens or JOTS or know any of that stuff in order to deal with the auth pieces through these libraries. And it's really nice for building an application really quickly, and I'll show you an example of that in just a second. And it's, as you can see, there are a ton of different platforms that are covered, Microsoft platforms and non-Microsoft platforms that are covered there in terms of those libraries. So definitely check those out, and I'll show you an example of those right now. I'm going to go and build a really simple app, and this is going to be, you know, decidedly on the hey, there's nothing sort of Microsoft-specific about these technologies. In fact, I'm actually going to start in Sublime, just to show you there's no tricks under my sleeve. I'm just building a text application. I've got an HTML and JavaScript application. This is really just a frame for an app. It's an Angular app. I'll show you what it looks like right now. If I go here, my node server running. Yeah. If I go here and I run it, it's basically just a frame for an app called O365 Cores Demo with Angular, and then it's got a bunch of headings where I would like to have my calendar events, my messages, my OneDrive for Business files, all that good stuff. But they're not there because I don't have the code written. So I'm going to go back into the app. If you're not familiar with Angular, it's a really nice little framework for building single-page applications. I've got a frame page called app.html, which just has an Angular reference and an Angular route reference. It's got a reference to Azure Active Directory's JavaScript library for doing all of this auth stuff in JavaScript, and another library that they built that's really slick that does integration between ADAL and Angular. So if you're building an Angular app and you're doing sign-in, you should definitely check this thing out. And then I've got my app.js, which declares my app and creates a couple of dependencies here, and then configures the routes. So when a user visits the root of the application, I want to invoke this controller called home controller, which, as you can see down here, is empty right now. And I want to use this template, home.html, as the HTML. If I look at home.html, that's where all those headings for calendar events come. And it's got a list right now that's just not being filled in by dynamic data. So I'm just going to go ahead and fill those in. I think you'll see how easy it is compared to all the stuff we just did in a second. So I've got a snippet. I've got a snippet for doing the ADAL config. So this is to config that ADAL library. I have to tell it which tenant this app works against. So I can create a single tenant one by giving a specific tenant, or I can say common for it to for it to work everywhere. I have to give it the client ID. That's just that same GUID I got out of the Azure Active Directory portal. I can specify a bunch of extra parameters, like if I want admin consent, or if I always want a prompt, or if I want, in this case, the new UX instead of the old UX. And then I have to give it the endpoints. And these endpoints are just the endpoints that I would like Azure Active Directory to automatically go get me an access token for and attach to the request. Yes, it automatically goes and gets you an access token if you put them in here, which is super cool. So you'll see a SharePoint URL in here. You'll see outlook.office365.com. You'll see OneNote.com. And you'll see graph.windows.net. So it's going to make calls to all those guys. And it's going to handle all of the auth pieces for me. The only other auth code that I have to write is in these routes, I tell it when I actually want it to require AD login. So I'm going to say require AD login on this home route, and that's going to force people to log in if they haven't already logged in. So now I've got my auth code actually done. I won't have to write any more auth code, which is kind of amazing to me. And then I'm just going to write a little bit of REST code. So I'm going to create a factory. In Angular, factories are how you do factories or services or a few other things, are how you do most of your service interaction. And you can see I'm just using the Angular $HTTP thing to do a quick GET request on all of these me/events, me/messages, me/files, me/notes/notebooks, and me/memberof to get all those things from simple REST APIs. They return JSON, so there's no like parsing the response. It's just already a JavaScript object, so that's really simple and straightforward. And then the last thing I have to do is actually call those things in my controller. So I'll put the controller body in there. You can see I'm just putting some loading text in there to start with, and then I'm calling all of those endpoints in the factories, and inside of a promise, I'm setting them onto the scope, which in Angular is your model, basically. So I hit save, and I go back here, and I hit F5, and I actually want to run the dev tool so you can see things. Hold on a second. So I hit save, and I hit F5. You can see that it actually is making all of those requests directly in the browser. You can see they're not coming from a server-side piece. I didn't do any OAuth code. I didn't handle any access token. All of that was just handled because that plugin knows, oh, I registered all those endpoints, and it knows to go and get me access tokens for each one of those endpoints when I don't have one, and then it will go and automatically attach them on every outbound XML HTTP request. So pretty slick. I've integrated with all those different Office 365 APIs. You can see my calendar events, my messages, my OneDrive for Business files, my OneNote notebooks, and my groups, my most important OneNote notebook, wine, beer, and food. And then you can see that they're all coming from, if you look at the network trace in Chrome, you can see that they're all coming directly from the browser using a CORS request. So pretty slick, simple, and easy. And again, that's just with the 8L library. So I'm just using a library and a tool for auth, and I'm using whatever framework I'd like for everything else. OK, so then the last thing I want to show you is, hey, we also have a bunch of tools that are specific to the Office 365 APIs, not just for auth. And we have them for a variety of platforms. Again, they're pretty much all open source on the Office Dev organization. We have SDKs for iOS. We have an SDK for Android. We even have an add-in for Android Studio where you can automatically register for a new client ID from within Android Studio in your project. We have stuff for Java Server and for Xamarin. We have Cordova plugins now. And we have an SDK and a bunch of tools for Visual Studio. And the tools for Visual Studio are really the coolest piece. I'll just show you those real quick, just give you the kind of tip of the iceberg on that. I'm going to go to Visual Studio, and I'll show you the File New Project creation thing. So if I go to File New Project, and I choose ASP.NET Web Application, this is in the RC of Visual Studio 2015, by the way. If I hit OK there, and I choose MVC, you'll see there's a dialog here that lets me pick the authentication. And Azure Active Directory is actually integrated directly into the File New Project. So if I choose Work and School as my authentication provider, I can then choose directly from in here whether I want a single-tenant app or a multi-tenant app. I can choose which domain, which directory I want to put it into if I have multiple. I can decide whether or not I want to read directory data in addition to just getting the stuff that's in the OpenID Connect token. And I can hit OK. And when I hit OK, it will actually go and create that project. And behind the scenes, it'll go out to Azure Active Directory, create a new application for me, go and get the client ID, go and get the secret, go and register for all those permissions. And just in the interest of time, I've got a project where I already did that, literally nothing else. If you look in web config, you can see here's my client ID, here's my client secret, here's my domain, here's my tenant ID. All that stuff is configured for me automatically without me having to write a single line of code. And if I hit F5, I have an app that is already running. It'll run on localhost, and it will sign the user in and ask them for permission to access their profile without me writing a single line of code. So it's pretty slick. I'll give it just a second here to load. And then also, I want to mention this really quickly, just in the interest of time. Load this guy. Come on, IIS Express. We're running out of time. So what you'll see if I actually look in the project, here I'll just show you this real quick while it's loading. If I look in the project, you can see, it's going to sign me in. I'm going to sign in with this user. While it goes back and loads the page, I can show you things like if I go into the controller, you can see there's already a user profile controller that's using all of this config in order to go and create an Azure Active Directory client. Here's the Azure Active Directory client. And it's making a query for the user and getting back all of their basic information, like their name and their first and last name, I think, in this case, and their user profile name. But it could get other things like their department or their manager. This is just sort of the boilerplate code that it's starting with. So if I go to this page and I click on this, I'll go to that user profile controller. And you'll see that it's already able to call Azure Active Directory and pull back information like my display name. The last thing that I'll show you real quick in this tool is that's all the single sign-on piece. So if all you want is single sign-on, then that File New Project thing will get you. But we also support the ability to go right-click on a project and add a connected service. And this works in almost all project types in Visual Studio, by the way. So even if you're creating like a command line app and you want to do single sign-on and connect Office 365 services, you can right-click and add a connected service and choose the Office 365 APIs there. You can sign in with a tenant that you'd like to develop with. So I'll sign in one more time. They promised me that by RTM, it's going to use the keychain, so you won't have to sign in so many times. And it will automatically make sure that I'm registered inside the directory. You can see in this case, the project was already registered, so it's just using the same one. I can set whether it's single or multiple tenant. I can set my redirect URIs, my reply URLs. And I can request permissions to specific APIs. So say I want to request permission to read and write your files, and I hit apply. When I hit add, it'll actually go and find all the NuGet packages for all the SDKs that I need for whatever I picked. So if I chose files or Outlook or whatever else, it'll go find those NuGet packages and those NuGet packages only, and it will add them to my project so I can immediately start writing code to call the files API, and everything's configured for me in the back end. I don't have to go separately to the Azure Management Portal. OK, so that's the quick summary of what's in Visual Studio. Obviously, those are the most complete tools. I can do a ton that are just point and click and config. I don't have to go back and forth between portals. I'm going to go back to PowerPoint and finish up. I think I have like 30 seconds. So that was the demo of Visual Studio. In summary, hey, bring Office 365 into your app. Do single sign-on, start there, but then take it the next step. Add in the intelligence that you get from interacting with things like the user's calendar, from things like the Office Graph with their notebooks, using the Office 365 REST APIs, and all of the tools in the SDKs that make it really easy to integrate it into your platform. There are a ton of related sessions. In fact, there's almost a related session for every different service that I talked about, and that's in the Office 365, and almost one for every different platform. There's a specific session on integrating Office 365 into Windows 10 apps, and one on integrating Office 365 into Xamarin apps, and multi-device development apps, and web apps. So take a look at those sessions if you want details on those specific platforms. They'll go into a ton of detail. If there are any that you already missed or you can't attend, they'll be online, so read those. There's a bunch of resources there. You probably already heard about this, but we're launching a developer program for Office developers that includes a bunch of extra benefits. In particular, I'd point out the free developer subscription for a year. If you want to go sign up for that thing, there's a bunch of extra benefits around. You get free access, like a free professional license for Telerik Kendo UI controls and a bunch of other cool stuff. So sign up for that program. We'll send you newsletters about new releases and new features that are coming out. You'll get free access to training, all that kind of stuff. That's part of the call to action. And I hear there are actually some really cool hoodies down at the Office 365 developer sort of booth on the first floor. And if you go and get some stickers for answering some questions, I believe you get your own Office 365 hoodie, which I'm very jealous of at this point. Apparently, you don't get any of the cool stuff like devices or hoodies when you actually work for Microsoft. So, sad Rob. But OK, thanks very much, guys. I really appreciate you spending the time. I know it was a really busy, fast session. I hope you took a lot away, and I hope you understand much more deeply the Office 365 REST APIs. Please, please, please do take the time. Send me some feedback. Give me an evaluation. Let me know what I can do better next time. Let me know what was useful for you. And I hope you have a great rest of your Build conference. Thanks very much.